Okay, so today what I'd like to do is make up for last week, because we're up to mitzvah 29, and what I'd like to do is, you see, it's one of the shortest entries of the Sefer HaChinuch, certainly one of the shortest of the Minchas Chinuch. I sent out a page, it's page Kuf Lamed Zayin. Camille, you hear me now?
Yes, I realized I was on mute.
Okay. Okay, so here's the thing. Mitzvah 26, 27, 28, and 29 are counted as four separate mitzvahs that's in the second of the Aseres HaDibros. Okay? So it says, Lo yelucha Elohim achirim al panai, that's one. Lo tishtachavel lohem, two. Velo sa'avdeim. And then it says, Lo taselecha pesel. So there are commentaries who find numerous mitzvahs in Dibra number two. So I think we're going to find some interesting opinions about what to count as mitzvahs in these four. And I wouldn't be surprised if some of the opinions that appear in Chazal have to do with a famous Agadah. Right? The famous Agadah is that Moshe spoke 611 mitzvahs. Torah tziva lanu Moshe, right? You get that? Gematria of Torah being 611. And God spoke the other two. So that's how we know that there were 613 mitzvahs. That's it. Show me any other source that tells us how we know we have 613 mitzvahs. Right? Unless it's just a tradition. If you count up all the 10 or so famous lists of 613 mitzvahs, you're going to find over 800 mitzvahs. But what they all 10 of them have in common is that the 10 of them all have 613. Right? They all have different counts. Okay? So if the second of the Aseres HaDibros, however, is four mitzvahs, then if Moshe gave us 611, we should be having 616 mitzvahs, not 613. Because Moshe gave 611, God spoke five. Okay? It's very clear to anyone reading the Aseres HaDibros, and I like to call them the Ten Commandments, because nobody counts only Ten Commandments there. Ten Commandments is the name of a movie. Either call it Aseres HaDibros in Hebrew or the Decalogue. Right? No one ever calls it in English the Ten Sayings. Right? The Ten Dibros. Whatever. But the second of the Aseres HaDibros has more than one mitzvah. And Shabbos certainly has more than one mitzvah. Zochor es yom haShabbos lekodesho, sheish yesamim tavod v'asiskom lachtecha. Right, lo ta'aseh kol melacha, that there's definitely more than one mitzvah there. Right, according to some reckonings, the Aseres HaDibros has 14 mitzvahs in it. Not 10, but 14. Right, now you can just look at the pshat and see that the first two Dibros are treated differently because they're in first person. Right, Anochi, I am the one that took you out of Egypt. Don't have any gods besides me. Right, the third Dibra doesn't say don't take my name in vain. It says don't take the name of the Lord in vain, as if though it's not God talking anymore. Okay, you hear that?
Doesn't it depend, Rabbi, on how you look at it? When you say that, you know, with Shabbos, you have all these mitzvahs. It really could be one mitzvah. Keep Shabbos. And this is the way you have to keep Shabbos. Not every way you keep Shabbos is a mitzvah. The mitzvah is Shabbos.
Okay, but you can't say there's only one mitzvah when there is a lashon of an asay. Zachor is yom haShabbos lekodesho. That's a mitzvah asay. You may want to say that all the mitzvahs asay of Shabbos are wrapped up into that one. What are the mitzvahs asay of Shabbos? Make kiddush, have onik Shabbos, have kavod Shabbos, dress nicely, eat special foods. That's the mitzvahs asay of Shabbos, the things you do. Then there's the mitzvahs lo asay of Shabbos, the things you don't do, called malacha. Now there are 39 malachas. There's a whole lot of mitzvahs regarding Shabbos. But we can divide them into a positive command and a negative command, just like you're saying, and include many things in each category, but at least that's certainly more than one category. keep Shabbos means more than just don't do malacha.
Right? I understand, but it could be under one heading. In other words, keep Shabbos, that's the mitzvah. These are the things you can or cannot do on Shabbos. Doesn't mean that each one of those things are necessarily mitzvahs that you do. It's part of the original mitzvah of how to keep Shabbos.
Okay, look, let me tell you something even better than this. The Rambam counts as two separate mitzvahs. One is rest on Shabbos, and two, don't not rest on Shabbos.
I do both of those very well.
Okay, but you know what I'm saying? In other words, it's rest on Shabbos. If someone does malacha on Shabbos, that person is simultaneously violating an aseh and a los aseh.
Yeah, I need you to tell this to my wife.
Fine. And by the way, wish Sophie a happy birthday for me, please.
Okay. That's tomorrow.
I know.
Big day. Thank you.
So that's just with respect to Shabbos. But anyway, so what I want to show is that different commentaries and different lists of mitzvahs count these four in different ways. Okay, you should have maybe a pasuk up and in front of you, and you can see the different mitzvahs. This is just sort of a review, at least the last three, 26, 27, and 28. Let me just review them. 26 is lo yelcho elohim acherim, and the chiddush of the Sefer HaChinuch and the Rambam is that you can violate this just by in your thoughts, without any action at all. Right? If you give certain powers to illogical things, now, what can I tell you? There are some people who are very free in calling certain behaviors avodah zarah, but they're close to it. They're really close to it. When people attribute certain powers to ayin hara, or I mean, I don't know. You know, the Rambam was very strict about these things. What has the power out there to God doesn't share anything with anybody. All right, but if there is something called an ayin hara, maybe you can call it that we're bringing about the jealousies of other people, right, by bragging about what I have. And the way to resolve ayin hara is to say kinayin hara. Right? You know what I'm saying? Don't brag about how many grandchildren you have or about how much you're earning, because someone might be listening who will begrudge that. And then we bring an ayin hara upon ourselves, not because there's a power out there called ayin hara. No, but because when we speak in a way that brings about, like the Gemara says, ayin hara, what we're really bringing about is someone's hard feelings or jealousies. We don't want to be there. We don't want to be responsible for that at all. One of the two most famous cases of ayin hara in the Tanakh is Hagar, and the way she boasted about being pregnant in front of Sarah, who was waiting so long to have a child, and similarly, Penina, who puts an ayin hara on all her children by the way she behaves with Chana, and is so insensitive to Chana's pain over watching all these little children running around, and she has nothing. All right.
Could you say a superstition is a avodah zarah? I used to play baseball. Guys used to, have to hit the base three times or do thing. You know, people have these superstitions that they feel if they do it, that's what they got to keep doing. And even in major leagues, they have it.
Yeah, they put the cap on upside down, or they turn the cap around. People have certain rituals before a game. Yeah, I don't know. I think that's just narishkeit. I don't know if I would call that avodah zarah. It's just narishkeit. You know, people do that. People, they have certain rituals that they do. I know in sports, it's very common.
Rabbi, what is narishkeit?
Narishkeit means foolishness in Yiddish.
Okay. Thank you.
Like nar, you're behaving like a nar. All right, So here, listen to some of the questionable mitzvahs. So because not everybody counts this number 26, lo yelecha elohim achrim al panai. Because the people, the commentaries who don't see a mitzvah there, because they derive this from lo al tifnu el ha elilim in Parshas Kedoshim. Al tifnu el ha elilim. That's more like it, where you turn to something else for advice, for just what would be considered today's elilim. You know, I don't know. Anything that's illogical. Robbie mentioned the superstitions. You know, it's called nichush, lo tenachashu velo te'onenu. All these superstitions and magical incantations that the ancient men used to do smacks of this called al tifnu elilim. Okay? 27 is lo taselach o pesel v'chol tmuna, right? So here the chinuch of the Sefer Chinuch was that even if you make it for someone else, you don't worship it, you just have a store where you make these things. It's a whole series of discussions between Rav Avadya Yosef, the Tzitz Eliezer, of whether a Jew can own a jewelry store that sells crosses. Are you familiar with the literature on this? There's some that Tzitz Eliezer says a cross...
I heard it's fine.
But I'm just saying that's Avadya Yosef. But the Tzitz Eliezer says that a cross, even without someone on it, is a avodah zarah.
Rabbi, what about the amulets that were popular in the Sabbatean era, right? The amulets that they used to make.
Yeah, look, I'll tell you though. Who's more of a rationalist than the Rambam? And yet the Rambam can't help but see that there's a Mishnah in Maseches Shabbos, in the sixth parak, that talks about carrying amulets on Shabbos.
Right.
In the Rishus HaRabim Gomor. So the Rambam says you're allowed to carry them, not because he thinks that it's efficacious, but if the person who's deathly ill thinks that it's efficacious, the Rambam was well aware, as all medical practitioners tell you today, that the frame of mind of the very ill person, cancer patient or whatever it may be, that the frame of mind of knowing, I really feel that because of this, holding this amulet, and Rashi actually says what some of the amulets were in his day. Get this? He says a rabbit's foot. A rabbit's foot. Get that? Then he says a tooth of a fox. Right? People would walk around with these things for certain problems. Right? Now, in the Ashkenazic world, they really felt that it was doing something. In the Sephardic world, they knew it was, Charlie, listen to the word again, narishkeit. They knew it was narishkeit, but they felt that, you know, it has some kind of an effect on people. People think that it helps them, so it starts to help them. It's the placebo effect. So.
Well, it was also one of Rav Yaakov Emden's, you know, objections to Eibeshitz, right? I mean, through Rav Yonason Eibeshitz, was that he made an amulet, that he...
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I ever see these magic bowls and these were very popular even before Shabbat. Right, so, okay. Usually, the rationalists say if it's beyond your control, you have no business doing it.
Rabbi, what about the Sephardic hands that you see?
I must say, from all the scholarship that I read on it, the Sephardic Chamsa is an Arab, is taken from Islam. It's called the Chamsa because of five fingers, Chamsa, Chamesh, right? Candor, I have a chamsa in my house. We kept it as someone gave it to us as a gift, so we hung it up on the wall. Right, it has some psukim on it. So to think that the psukim actually help you, that the Mishnah says is that you lose your olam haba over that. Remember in Sanhedrin. Don't think chas v'shalom. Don't make the Torah and psukim out to be like hanos atzmo. Don't write extra signs in your mezuzah that the mezuzah should protect my house. That's disgusting. That's turning a beautiful mitzvah into personal effects. That's not what the Torah is about. Rambam says if you think that you're saying Tehillim and the words of Tehillim come out and help you, that's that you're misusing it. You're the whole sefer. What helps us? When you look at the mitzvah, you look at the mezuzah as you leave your house, as you come in, and you decide that because I'm surrounded with mitzvahs and I have a mezuzah in my door, that I'm always going to do the right thing, that's what's going to help you. You'll make better decisions because you know that you look at the mezuzah when you come in and when you go out. Right? But to think that any mitzvah itself has the power to help us starts to attribute, what difference does it make whether it's an amulet or a pair of tefillin or any other physical object? None of those objects have the power to do anything to you outside of the volition of God.
So what happens if someone says, you know, God, if you just do this, you know, get me over this sickness, I will do, you know, I will do this or I will do that. Is that something?
No, Robbie, that's perfectly acceptable. That's perfectly acceptable. As long as the, you know, when people give, let's say they want to give $100 to tzedakah or something, and they say, God, I'm giving this $100 so that the appointment I have that this person is having at the oncologist should go well. So good, so it's going to go well. But if it doesn't go well, you're going to go back to the tzedakah box and take your money back? That's how I'll to you, kavodim, I'm in the shamshin esarav, I'm in the slakabu pras. And we start to attribute powers. This money does not have the power to make this person better.
Right.
This money, this tzedakah has the power, though, to gain what the access it gains is the mercies of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, who says, oh, this person has mercy over other people, I'm going to have mercy over him. This goes down to a whole, you know, the pasuk says, "Tzedakah tatzam mimavus." After all, the whole host. This is getting off on a bit of a tangent. But if someone that I know is ill, what chutzpah do I have to try to get God to change the decree on that person? If this person is supposed to stay ill, then who am I to change God's plan?
So why say Tehillim?
Yeah, why say Tehillim? Why ever daven? The answer is because we don't know what God's plan is. And we do feel that we can affect, we can change, we can show how important this person is. Camelia?
Maybe you can make the argument that Hashem is making somebody sick, not that we would know specifically, but you know, in theory, you could make the argument that Hashem is making somebody sick because let's say you start doing tzedakah. Once you start doing tzedakah, you put goodness into the world. Once you put goodness into the world, you achieve some Hashem's goal to do, you know, something else for somebody else. Okay. And then Hashem will make the other person get better because you just,
That's the way we view history. That's why we say that it's Sinas Chinam that lost the Beis HaMikdash, not overwhelming Roman might. Okay, yeah, 100%. I think that's a good way to view it. Okay, so that was mitzvah number 27. So, lo ta'aseh lecha pesel, even for someone else, and you can't have someone make it for you, right? So, lo ta'aseh lecha, meaning don't you make it even for someone else, and lo ta'aseh lecha, don't have someone else even make it for you. Now, lo sishtachave lohem, the lo sa'ovdeim, is counted by the Sefer HaChinuch as two separate mitzvahs. Okay? And this is how he expressed it. 28 was the last one we did, Lo Sishtachaveh, which is a specific type of service. Sishtachaveh is when you want to show subservience over someone else, you bow to that person. So don't show that this God has any dominion over you. Right? Why would someone want to show a God that having dominion? Because I think that the God can do something good for me and refrain from doing something bad for me. Why did Cain decide to bring a korban to God? He wanted to access the power and the strength and whatever good things that power can do for me. I'm sure it's based on things his parents told him, right? Okay, ancient man always wanted to harness that type of power.
Okay. When you say lo tishtachaveh, you know, the Japanese have a custom, you know, of bowing to each other. Does that in any
pretty
way
low,
affect?
Too.
What was that?
Pretty low. They go.
Yes. So I'm asking you because when I went to Japan, you know, to these places and we met with some of, you know, the heads of state, you know, we were told it's, you know, it's proper to bow to them too, or they look at it as very...
Mm-hmm. It is totally, totally acceptable to do that and to bow to the queen and things of that sort. I will tell you this, that when we learned already a few weeks ago that tishtachaveh, lo tishtachaveh lohem, that is violated when you bring your head to the ground, right? Vayikod. This is called the Kodkod up here. All right. So Vayikod means bowing down, probably on your hands and knees, and touching your head to the floor. So what's Ishtachava? Ishtachava is getting flat down on the ground. That's what you're not allowed to do in front of an idol. Okay? And there's an extra Avera, even if you're bowing to God, if the ground is made of stone. Remember that? The Evan Maskis? Okay? All right, so the reason for that is because in the ancient world they used to make figurines on the stone floors and on the stone walls. And we've found many ancient synagogues that have, you ever see the mosaic floors and the mosaic walls? Do you ever see them? So
Kfar Nachum has a famous one.
Yeah, very often though, I mean, we see that the Christians really, really bought into that stuff. There were debates over whether a shul can have those things, right? Whether a shul should have actual, you know, pictures in the shul, sometimes of people, you know, this, you know, pictures of the tribes or something like that, or, you know, stained glass that has animals or things on it, you know. Those are, you know, shuls are decorated with those kind of things all over the world, right? You know, we're not supposed to have any. The one thing you see in some shuls is lions. You ever see lions like on the two sides of the Aseres HaDibros, or maybe sometimes on a curtain or something, or even on the top of Torahs. Look at some of the Torah mantles, and you'll see there are lions, little lions on top of them. Right? Where'd that come from? The answer is Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash had lions on the curtains. Right? And they had what's called Kruvim, cherubs, like little children faces. Right? The Kruvim themselves. Now, I think I might have told you back that there's a dispute on the word Hishtachava, whether the Shorish is Shin Ches Hei, which means to coil, shin ches hei, in which case the tuf is not part of the shoresh, right? No one holds that the tuf is part of the shoresh. However, there's a chiddush coming up, is that according to some other scholars, the shin is also not part of the shoresh. That the shin of hishtachavaya is like the shin of shibud, mishubadim. Shoresh there is evid. What's the shin doing? It's the shimush hamikra. It's like l'shachnea. Right? You get it? So the shorish there is kaf nun ayin. What's the shin doing there? So it's part of like a tiferes halashon. Hishtachava is to, like the shorish there would be chavi, chet vav yud, which means possibly also to coil, but to be like a snake. To roll, just get down like a snake and coil over. All right, some scholars say that it's a nafkamina between Vayishtachu, which would be Shin Ches Hei, and Vayishtachu, which would be Ches Vav Yud. All right. Anyway,
usually in Hippael, right, the Shin and the Taf transpose.
Yes, if
Ishtadel or something.
Yes, if you want to get. Because it's lihit pael, it's getting a tuf in there. You do lihistader, you add a tuf that's not part of the shorish.
Right.
And you change the letters around just because of the ease with which to say the sh or s before a t than vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? It's much easier to say lihistadel than to say lihit shadel.
Right.
Right. Lihistader is a lot easier to say than lihit sader.
Yes, yes.
Right. Okay, you get it? Otcha mistolel ba'ami, where Moshe talks to Paro, that's where Rashi talks all about this phenomenon that John is mentioning. Okay, so now our mitzvah number 29 is really a fundamental point of this in the seventh parak of Maseches Sanhedrin. where it says Lo to Avdeim, Shalola Avod Avodzara. There you go, here it is. Don't serve Avodzara. Okay, that's the general that's the general terminology. Al ta avod avodzara. Don't worship avodzara. What does that mean? So this is broken down into two categories. Everything in Maseches Avodzara on this topic is broken down into two categories. And the point is that I just said that it's in Maseches Sanhedrin, because Maseches Sanhedrin, the seventh parak, talks about all the death penalties. And when it talks about the death penalty for Avodah Zarah, we have to know, how does one violate Avodah Zarah to deserve the death penalty? Maseches Avodah Zarah doesn't really concern itself with that topic. But here is the point. Every Avodah Zarah in the world can be violated in one of four ways. Then every Avodah Zarah in the world has its own way of violating. Every Avodah Zarah has its own particular service. First, what are the four ways that every Avodah Zarah is violated? Right? Remember what they are? Bowing down. Right? Zebach. Slaughtering an animal to it. Now, it could be an animal. It could be, like the Gemara says, it could be a locust. Right? It could be a pigeon. Whatever you say, the worship of this Avodah Zarah, I'm going to slaughter a locust for this Avodah Zarah. That can be a violation of the Torah law. Right? Then there's something called Nisuch. Okay? There's Nisuch, which means to pour libations before it, which is why we have a special din called Yayin Nesech. Today, the wine of a Gentile is not forbidden as Yayin Nesech. Gentiles do not pour libations today. In the Roman times, before a Roman would drink his cup of wine, he would spill a little off to his God, make a blessing to his God, and then drink the rest, feeling that the God just blessed the wine for me. Right? That wine now becomes something called Tikrovus of Odazar and is very usher. Right? So that's the iser of libation. Then there's an iser of zrika. Zrika is where you sprinkle blood on something. Right? These are yishtachavaya, zevach, nisuch, zrika. And it could be anything. It doesn't have to be blood. Could be throwing a stick. Could be throwing anything that's part of a sacrificial service. So these four are true to every Avodah Zarah. Even here's the Chiddush. Even if this particular Avodah Zarah isn't served with sacrifices, doesn't matter. Any one of these four violate the Torah. Then you have to know that every single Avodah Zarah has its own. Particular way of service. Now, here's an interesting chiddush. There's an Avodah Zarah called Marculis. Marculis is probably, good scholars say, related to the planet Mercury. Marculis is the god of travel. Why is Mercury, you ever see a picture of Mercury with a wing on his shoe, right? Or the Mercury dime with the wing and her hair? Right. What's the reason that Mercury is considered the god of good travel and safe travels?
Because fastest planet.
It's the fastest planet. Right. It travels very quickly. They saw that it races through the sky much faster than the other planets, and the ancient peoples thought that worshiping this god that represented this planet would help me in my travels. Right. So have you ever seen a Mercury stone in Israel? I've seen them. I don't know why they allow them to remain, but it's two stones like this, right? And then there's a stone on top. Does it sound familiar? All right? It's a perpendicular kind of, two parallel stones, and then a stone on top perpendicular to both.
Like Stonehenge?
Yeah, it could be, yeah. And the service of this Avodah Zarah is to pass it and to throw a stone in the cavity. If you throw a stone in the cavity, you get a small stuffed animal, and you know that you'll have a safe travels. Not only is this narishkeit, but it's actually avodah zarah. Now, what happens if a person who wants to be in the face of this avodah zarah wants to take a stone and say, "Oh, I'm gonna stone this avodah zarah"? Right? Don't do that, because even if you're doing it in order to be disparaging, that's the service of this avodah zarah. Yoser mizu, you all know about the service of Peor, right? The whole way to worship Peor is to be doing something as outrageous as possible, even disparaging, right? So you get, listen to the lumdus. If the Jew wants to go into Peor and say, "I'm going to defecate on this animal's, on this idol's nose, and I'm going to wipe myself on his forehead, make a big schmear and make a bizoyon," right? So you're going to say, I'm not doing it to serve the God. I'm doing it to disparage the God. More power to me. No! No! Bizoyon is the way to serve this God. You're serving the God through your bizoyon. And what difference does it make what you're thinking? That's the avodah zarah. So don't do it. Okay? All right, so that's the, even if his kavana is to be disparaging, all right? Okay, so, but wait a second. We learned in mitzvah number 26. We learned in mitzvah number 26 that if someone is forced to worship avodah zarah under pain of death, for sure, it wouldn't be considered avodah zarah. What would be the avera? Chilul Hashem. And he lost the opportunity to die al kiddush Hashem. But it wouldn't be avodah zarah. He's forced to do it. You ever hear the question, why didn't Moshe just bow down to Haman? Just bow down to him. We just said before, you could bow down in China. If Robbie can bow down to the Japanese in Japan... If you can bow down to the Japanese CEO, why can't you bow down to Haman?
Say, and he wore something on his neck.
Right.
He had an idol.
Yes. Gemara says he, or that he made a god of himself. If you're bowing down to this person because you just want to show some kind of respect, all right, isn't the hate. But if the whole point is that the person makes a god of himself, like Haman was doing, then that's a whole different story. All right. But still, the Gemara says that, let's say, the Jews who converted to Christianity during the Spanish Inquisition. You know what I'm talking about, right? See, the Inquisition went after these conversos to make sure that they didn't secretly keep Judaism, right? The expulsion went after all the Jews, but the Inquisition during the 14th century was really mostly against the converted Jews to make sure that they're remaining converted, right? You know, Bibi Netanyahu's father was a scholar of that period. He wrote a doctoral thesis about this period. You remember Bibi's brother Ido came to Ohev Tzedek a few years back, and he spoke about his father's work. His father tried to show that the Jews who converted to Christianity were despised. They were called pigs. They were called Muranos, means pigs in Spanish, right? And what he's trying to show is that when Jews have tried to join the host nation in the diaspora, it's with Gunish Telfin. They're not gonna ever accept you anyway. You converted for nothing, right? So all right. You know, he was trying to show the only future that the Jews ever have is to make their way to Israel. Because in the end, wherever you are in the diaspora, Jews are going to end up trying to be the remaining Jews that stick around. They're going to try very much to be like the nation, their host nation, and they're never going to be totally accepted. So don't try. Okay, anyway, so the Muranos were serving Christianity out of Yira, right? The Gemara says even if you serve it out of Ahava, it's not called Avodah Zarah. You're not serving it out of an intellectual desire to get to know this Avodah Zarah, right? It's like Znus. Remember Yirmiyahu's Znus, right? Chapter 3, Yirmiyahu calls all the idol worship Znus. They didn't know. Dimayu Yisrael Shein Mamish Avodah Zarah La'atirum Gilirais. But for Estia, the Jews knew that Avodah Zarah was nonsense. They just ran after it for the sake of the Gilui Arayos involved, right? Did I mention this last week? I just wrote a letter into Commentary Magazine. Anybody here get Commentary? No one gets Commentary? Jews should read Commentary. You know what it is? It's sort of a conservative Jewish magazine. It's a monthly. John Podhoretz is the editor at large right now. His father used to be the editor, Norman Podhoretz. I'm surprised. You Jews should get Commentary. It's Shayach. Anyway, I wrote a letter for this past something that incensed me in Commentary. The last page is usually some kind of social commentary. And hold on to your seats on this. The last page this past month bemoaned the fact that because of the Me Too movement, there's much less nudity in movies. And I'm so upset. I said, this is what Commentary has to write about? We're used to such a high level, and he's usually Divrei Torah at some point in each monthly. What are you doing with that? So I said, what this reminds me of is the ancient propensity to bring nudity and snus into the temples, because the high priests knew that they had nothing. They knew that Avodah Zarah was nonsense. So how do we get people to flock to nonsense?
You have to make them into fools. It's a culture of fools.
Yeah. Yisrael Shein Mamish Avodah Zarah. They knew that it was foolish. They knew there was narishkeit. They knew it was nothing. So how do you get people to flock to not nothing? Nudity. Right? So I said, well, that's what you want from Hollywood. Because you know that when they have to pepper their whatever they're showing with that, then that's a sign of the failure of the message. Avodah Zarah knows that its message is so lacking in content that the only way to get the people to want to come is to give them narishkeit. Okay, a word I've used too often tonight. But when it comes to Avodah Zarah, you can't say the word narishkeit too many times. All right, so here's the question the Chidushi Aran asks. He says, if the Gemara says that serving Avodah Zarah out of Yira or Ahava is not really Avodah Zarah, it's just Chil Hashem, he doesn't really believe it. He doesn't want to get killed. He doesn't want to get burnt at the stake. He wants his family to be able to, he wants his son who shows promise in music to be able to go to a music school. Right, Felix Mendelssohn would never have been able to be a composer if his father, Moses Mendelssohn's son, by the way, had not converted to Christianity. Right, so that's called Avodah Zarah Me'ahava or Avodah Zarah Me'Yira, and the Gemara says that's not considered Avodah Zarah. So how is throwing a rock at Marculis to show Bizayon, or wiping yourself on the nose of Peor to show Bizayon, not because you want to worship Peor. No. You want to disparage Peor. How could that? So how is that Avodah Zarah? Why should that be any less than serving out of Yira? Right? Okay.
Rabbi, let me ask you a question. When you say bow down and all these things of Avodah Zarah, don't you also have the Kavanah to do it as a Avodah Zarah? Why would it be different if you're trying to save your life and you're forced to do it? You really don't have the Kavanah to do it, but you don't want to die, so you're doing it. You know, you take the story of Mordechai and Haman. The truth of the matter is, if things didn't go the way it went, you could have killed tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Jews because he didn't bow down, but he wouldn't have had the Kavanah. So if you don't have the Kavanah, it shouldn't really count.
So that we did also when we did Lo Tishtachav Elohem. The Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah and Daf Yud Beis tells all kinds of things that one should not do, because it's one of the four services I just mentioned, and bowing is the first one. Remember, it said, "Don't pick up coins near Avodah Zarah." Remember that?
Yeah, but
I'm picking up the coins. I'm not worshiping this thing. Yeah, but it doesn't matter. Bowing is one of those four things. Now, the last time I think we dealt with kissing, the Camellia sent me a picture of it. Do people actually go up to drink the water from the mouth of that thing, or they just put it in a cup or something?
No, because usually you bring something there.
Yeah, because it looked to me like you couldn't get in there. You'd have to be going into
the water. No, there's a spout that comes, and then there's like rocks that they put down. So it's coming out like there's water from, let's say, a faucet. Because all that water gathers, travels, and then it comes out down.
Right, and so you can take a cup or a bottle or something and fill it.
Yeah, right, but then, use your hand if you go like this.
Right. Okay. So the Gemara was talking about a case where, in order to drink, you've got to put your mouth to the thing, and it looks like you're kissing the Avodah Zarah. Right. It's not very hygienic. But
But Rabbi, I'm asking for Bikuach Nefesh. I'm talking about when Mordechai, where hundreds of thousands of Jews would have been killed, only because he didn't bow down to Haman. You know, if you don't have the Kavanah and you're doing it to save hundreds of thousands of Jews, are you telling me that's still considered a Avodah Zarah?
Well, look at it this way. Mordechai was the only one who didn't, right? You know, everyone else was okay with doing it. Does that mean that everyone else was acting against the halacha? Look, I mean, Avodah Zarah is a monolithic issue. In other words, if it's usher, it's always usher. But the question is, is it considered hardcore Avodah Zarah? The Gemara preferred to tell you that Haman was making a god of himself than to say Mordechai was just being stubborn. Right?
Yeah, but again, my point I'm trying to find out about is, are you telling me you don't need Kavanah as part of the Avodah Zarah Chet?
Yeah, the Gemara, if it's one of the four universal Avodahs, right? You know what I'm saying? Kissing the Avodah Zarah. If someone is dying of thirst, and the only way for him to get water is to put his mouth up to that Avodah Zarah and make it look like he's kissing it, the Gemara says, drink it. Drink it. Kissing Avodah Zarah is not Yehareg Val Yavor. Kissing Avodah Zarah is not one of the four Avodos. Unless this particular Avodah Zarah is worshipped by kissing. Each Avodah Zarah has its own way. Remember, we learned of an Avodah Zarah where you bake cakes. Right, you pour the batter into molds and you bake cakes. Right, there's all kinds of Avodah Zarahs out there that each one has its own, mahalach. Okay, so the answer to the Chiddush Aran's question over, I want to make sure you get the question, is why did we say that worshiping the Avodah Zarah out of Yira or Ahava is not considered the Avodah Zarah? But making a bizayon to Baal Peor is, even if your purpose is to make the bizayon, because that's the avoda. Making a bizayon to Peor is like bowing down to it. Okay. All right. So take a look at from what Camellia sent you or from what you saw from me, right? You're showing a picture now, Camellia?
Yeah, I sent them so they could see what you were talking about, the one I showed you also.
Yes, thanks. All right. So in the last, look at the last few lines of the Sefer HaChinuch. It says, Shtei mitzvos elu, shimneha rambam zal. All right. Now, when the Sefer HaChinuch says these two mitzvahs, he really should be saying these three mitzvahs. Because the Rambam really counts 27 as separate mitzvah also, lo tasilach pesal. Right? Shtei mitzvah seilu shi'imenei ha-Rambam zal, shehin ishtachavot, l'avodizara v'chein shelo la'avda b'mash darga la'avda, not to serve any avodizara in the normal way that that particular avodizara is served. Yichlalem haramban zal b'lav de'lo yihyelecha. Ramban only finds one mitzvah here. Okay, there's only one mitzvah. This it may be based on the Agadah, right? Because if we say that Moshe gave us 611, right? And then after, besides number one, Dibur number one and two, there's 611 mitzvahs, so I can only suffer two mitzvahs here. Have more than two mitzvahs, then the number 613 doesn't make sense. Unless I heard one possible teretz is that you're familiar with some psukim in Devarim where God is talking to Bnei Yisrael and Bnei Yisrael saying, no, it's too much for us. Bro, I can't hear it. So almost everybody explains that had that happened after the second Dibra was completed. Because that's all in first person, as if though God's still talking. And then third person starts the next one when Moshe speaks. Lo tisa Hashem Hashem, not lo tisa Shmi Lashav. Right? So the however, a possible teretz is that God only spoke the words lo yelecha lihim achrim al panai. Right? Al panai, besides me. That's God talking. That's when Bnei Yisrael said, no, we can't listen anymore. And then Moshe took over there. You get it? Right? That's all Moshe talking now. All right? So it maintains the integrity of this Agadita that Moshe spoke 611 mitzvahs and God spoke only two. That's assuming, of course, that you hold from the fact that Anochi Hashem Elokecha is a mitzvah like the Rambam. Okay. We'll take a look quickly at the chinuch. Mostly concentrates on the one question I just posed you from the Chiddush Yaron, which is kigon. He writes kigon shezorik evan markulis or misakel mifanav avonim, or you stone this avodah zarah. That's the whole worship, to stone it, to throw stones at it. That's what the high priest of Markulis likes. He likes those stones. Right? So if you're throwing a stone to that thing in order to disparage it, right? So you should know that's actually its service. Right? Your intention doesn't matter here actually, because the whole point of these things is to show this bizayon. Okay. All right, So, that's the nature, that's the terminology of avoda zara, strange avoda, right? It could be avoda, it could be something that's bizayon to avoda, right? Okay, this is the extent of our treatment of these four mitzvahs. Okay, they're very long. The Rambam counts four. The Sefer Chinuch counts four. Ramban counts one. That's amazing. Right? It doesn't count four mitzvahs in the Aseres Dibros. Right? At least Dibur number two. Okay, this is very typical of the Mefarshim. Let me tell you some interesting mitzvahs that the Ramban counts that no one else does. Listen, get ready for this one. Yishomer, Zachor Eis Asher Asa Hashem LeMiriam B'Terech B'Tzeischem Mitzrayim. Remember what God did to Miriam when you were in the desert. That's a mitzvah? Did anybody remember fulfilling this mitzvah? When did you fulfill this mitzvah? Do we ever read this? We ever take the pasuk out and read it? It's a pasuk in Parshas Kisetze.
Well, it's one of the six zechiras that
yes.
Every day after that.
Yes, some people read that because they feel, I mean, each one of the six zechiras is observed in some different way, some special way, right? Montescore's Yom Tzitz Chomer Yitz Mitzrayim is observed very differently than Zachoris Asher Asolocha Amolik, but there it says Chomer Mitzrayim. So the Ramban says to remember what God did to Miriam is tied up into the mitzvah of not speaking Lashon Hara. Right. It's a bit of a stretch, but okay. Right. Let me tell you, the Rambam counts as a mitzvah. You should not eat food that has, you should not eat animals that don't chew its cud or don't have split hooves. And then he has a positive command. Eat, when you're eating, make sure that it has. And then the Rambam counts even another positive command. Get this? Look how easy this mitzvah is right now. Every Jew must know what makes a kosher animal. Just knowing fins and scales for fish and certain criteria for birds and chew cud and split hooves for the animal. Now you've just fulfilled three mitzvahs. Three mitzvahs, I say, to know what makes the animals kosher. Right? There's some very interesting things that make a mitzvah.
But that makes sense to me, to know what's kosher, because in those days, especially, people would travel. They may have to make their own food to know what is kosher. You know, it's like you have to teach your son or daughter how to swim.
Yeah, it was much more practical. Yeah. For us, that might be know your kosher symbols. Know which ones are acceptable, which ones are not so acceptable, things like that. Right? Okay. Finally, the last mitzvah that's a very unique mitzvah, but this is not in the Rabban, it's in the Smak, is lo yiyu ke korach uch'ad oso, next week's parsha. Right? After the earth swallowed up the whole camp, it said, don't learn your lesson, don't be like Korach. So according to the Smak, that's a mitzvah. Don't be contentious. Any Jew who's contentious is acting like Korach, and if you act like Korach, you're violating the Torah. Right? Also, Vayivorech Osam Elokim Lemor Pru Ravu Milu Ta'aretz. Doesn't sound like a mitzvah, it sounds like a bracha. Right? Okay. It's a blessing to have children. It's not a commandment to have children. Right? But that's also debatable in the Beforshim. Okay, that's going to close out our discussion of Avodah Zarah. We've spent enough time on that. Next week we have the mitzvah Shaloli Shava Lashov. We're going to have to define the word shov. We're going to have to define the word sheker. All right? What's the difference between shov and sheker? All right, we're going to have to see what's lotisod shem Hashem lokecha lashov. Mazer, what kind of word is that? All right, we'll analyze that in Mitzvah Shem next week. Meanwhile, everybody have a great week. Have a great Shabbos this week. I'll see you in Shul. And
have a good week.
By the way, we have to say the names.
Say the names, yeah. Please, let's say also Freda Ganendo, Bas Rachel Leila, and Leo Ben Shoshan, Chaya Mindel Bas Esther, and Simchalana Bas Rina, Ima. Rabbi, we have.
Yeah, Aryeh Lev, Eliyahu Alevi, Ben Elka.
Aryeh Yehuda Lev, Halevi, yeah.
Aryeh what?
Aryeh Yehuda Lev, Halevi, Ben Elka.
When did they add Yehuda?
Yehuda, you don't have Yehuda on there? I thought you always said Yehuda. I think it's Yehuda.
No, Aryeh Lev, Eliyahu.
Okay. I heard Aryeh Yehuda Lev. Okay. That's what you have.
He's very sick now. They just had by the coattail a whole Tehillin. And online and stuff, he's not doing well at all.
Not at all.
So Rufua for him, Reuven Ben Malka and Rachel Baslulu. Let's see who else we have. I guess that's it that I know about. The rest, thank God, are either okay or they didn't make it. One of the two.
Okay, everyone should have a Refuah Shleimah. Everyone should be well.
Right.